Welcome to the Omfit podcast.
Hello and welcome to the OMFIF DMI podcast, where we discuss key trends and new developments in innovation and the policy, technology and regulatory challenges in all things related to digital finance. I'm Katie Ann Wilson from OMFIF in London, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Bhavin Patel, our head of FinTech. Today we're going to give a short overview of what's been happening at the DMI, exploring some of the highlights and themes that have come to light through our meetings and research. Welcome, Bhavin. I think Bhavin's going to start off with a few questions regarding the meetings, and then we're going to touch upon research over the next few months.
Thanks, Katie Ann. We have held a lot of meetings in the past month or so. Firstly, the symposium, then a couple of bespoke meetings in the last quarter. My first question, given that you've programmed a lot of these meetings and moderated some of them, which ones have stood out to you and what have been the overarching themes?
Thanks, Bhavin. I think obviously the symposium was quite seminal. We really worked hard on, I guess, moving the thought leadership along a little bit. And the way we formulated it was we looked at retail side first and wholesale on day two. And if you just take the retail CBDCs as a standalone for a second, we brought together, you know, a central banker, a technologist, a commercial banker, and a payment service provider to look more in depth at the implementation strategies and some of the more wider policy implications of retail CBDCs. And, I mean, by large consensus, they all agreed that policy objectives come first, technology solutions come second. And there is a clear agreement across the panel on universal access being important, obviously in efficiencies as well. But then also on top of that, creating this platform of innovation, which was quite interesting. So this idea that we should use programmable money on top of financial inclusion, which I think is quite novel for central bankers to be thinking about this time. And then if you look at, you know, PayPal themselves, from the implementation perspective, they're already preparing to distribute and hold CBDC for their customers, which is quite news, quite novel for this market. On the commercial bank side, they've already discussed the implications for third-party providers holding the CBDC. And actually, Atul Butcher from DBS raised a really interesting point that actually this issue of third-party providers holding CBDC is very context-specific. In England, a few of them already do it. Europe, it's a little bit more controversial. And in Hong Kong, Singapore, they already participate in domestic payment systems. So actually, it isn't always about commercial banks versus fintech. We're actually seeing a lot more collaboration here, a lot more warmth in terms of their attitude towards payment service providers. And then we also heard directly from the Riksbank and their thoughts on their next few months of analysis of their CBDC project. And what was really interesting here is beyond financial instability concerns, they raised that actually we're seeing a greater risk of not acting with new players in the market. We're seeing challenges to sovereign money, and this hasn't really happened before. So what's on their mind is actually not how, well, they've already done a lot of analysis on financial stability concerns, but it's more how do we ensure we get these implementers, incumbent players to implement CBDC. So they're working on incentive structures in the next few months. And then I would say finally, one of the biggest takeaways that has spanned across our panels and the symposium is this idea that we need to move beyond this simple debate on binary concepts, so token versus account. It seems that it's just far too simple. It simplifies the questions that we're trying to address. We know that if you combine many of the features in different ways, there's more of a spectrum. For example, you can have an account-based model which preserves a level of privacy. And this also applies to distribution. So at a wider level, the kind of two-tier, one-tier structure, this isn't itself a binary choice. You can have a blended model where you have a central bank offering directly to consumers a token-based option while also operating through a two-tier model with commercial banks. So I think this was a really important point that we took away and we're going to raise again in our future discussions. And then finally, we had a session with John Cunliffe, a lecture after the symposium, which was excellent and very timely given the CBDC Task Force announcement. One of the main things here was, I think, his lack of concern over the potential disruption of banks. He said that they've reinvented their bank models before. He's previously said that the central bank's mandate is to protect financial stability, not banks' business models. So this is quite an interesting take on this, and it demonstrates the Sweden's also similar approach to shifting the concern away from the worry about banks, but more to wider society and economy implications, I think. And then finally, they're looking at, does it really matter if central banks can't access public money? Why should the state even be involved? So they're shifting their focus on the cost and risk of letting public money disappear if this is ever going to happen. And I think they published a discussion paper on this a few weeks ago. So, yeah, that's in a nutshell, I think, some of the key takeaways that we've seen over the past few months. So what about you, Bavin? What trends have you seen on the wholesale side? I haven't covered that. And in addition, any of your chats with various digital currency stakeholders?
Yeah, thanks for your points on the retail side. And I think it's quite important that we also take into account where a lot of developments have happened in this space, have been in the wholesale payment side. So the second day of the symposium, which focused on banking applications, DLT solutions, I moderated a panel with, of course, central bankers, industry specialists, commercial bank, all looking at how DLT-based payments, clearing and settlement applications, how they're best in terms of the use cases, how to identify the best time to innovate, the impact on traditional intermediaries, and how to actually bridge conventional and new payment systems. So I think what was quite clear is that central banks, and this was from Jochen Metzger from the Bundesbank, he outlined that central banks are actually becoming less skeptical about wholesale CBDCs. And we've seen that with the Banque de France projects and their asset tokenization and DLT payment clearing system there. So I think we're going to see a lot more of wholesale payment solutions come into project phases and real-time uses. And I think that was also highlighted by Laura Lowe, the director of blockchain at Temasek, who kind of highlighted that the payments pain points that happen on the back end still exist today, even though the conversation has moved from 2 years ago, where the MAS and the Bank of Canada started looking at this almost about 2-3 years ago with their projects. And Mark Williamson from the HSBC talked about FX Everywhere and where, you know, cross-border payments is a major use case for some of these DLT banking applications. And we had David Creer from GFT Group specifically talk about DLT and its properties. And I think the big takeaway was the programmability and the smart contracts feature, which again, Jochen also mentioned as a major benefit for DLT as a technology, especially in this use case. So I think going forward, we'll see a lot more in terms of wholesale payments projects, and hopefully a lot more central bank experiments around this space. Another meeting that we had last month, I think, builds on some of the points that you raised around the central bank's role in payments. And this was looking at what exactly the role of central banks are in payments. So is it serving as a catalyst, overseer, as a regulator and operator? And we're seeing more so these days that the central banks are expanding their role and the mandate into digital retail payments. And what has been the driver for this change and this new trend? And this is what we discussed. We had a number of different experts from the Bank of Israel, which was Odette Salomi, who's the Director of Payments and Settlement, Peter Conti Brown from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and Charlotte Hogg, CEO at Europe for Visa, and Thomas Lammer, the Deputy Head of Secretariat of the CPMI at the BIS. And of course, Judith Obolza, Managing Executive at Vodacom. So I think that sort of different multiple stakeholder perspective was quite interesting, where we kind of nail down exactly what the central bank does in terms of payments, if it even is necessary for the central banks to become heavily involved and when it should. Is it when there is fragmentation or risk of a monopoly, for example? What happens in the cross-border space when we look at payments globally? Is there a specific jurisdictional application of regulation? As well as if there's any double infrastructures, and that kind of dictates what type of new infrastructure that might come in with innovation. So that was something that we looked at in the last month or so. And yeah, I think a lot more in terms of how commercial banks, payment service providers will interact with the central bank. I think that's going to be slightly more unbundled now and a lot more questions as to what the role of the central banks in payments will be asked, I think.
Thanks for that, Bhavan. Yeah, I think your last point is really interesting, the point that infrastructure and regulation, we're always thinking that we're going towards standardization, but actually often because of the different infrastructure applications in one economy, you just can't migrate one system to another. And so just on top of that then, let's go on to the publication side a little bit more. Can you tell us about the latest journal that's just come out and what we can expect from research in the next half of the year?
Yeah, so I think the latest journal was quite is quite on point into a lot of the themes that we covered, and especially from what John Cunliffe said about breaking down commercial banks, business models, and looking at ways of how they can innovate. So the cover story for the last journal was looking at how banks are adapting to a new landscape where there are a number of different new players in the market, especially around payments. So we looked at how exactly commercial banks were approaching innovation. A lot of them were both partnering with fintechs, buying equity within them, or even just outright purchasing them. And that's because they feel there is a lot of pressure from their corporate clients to actually innovate and provide new ways of doing things, new efficiencies, cost saving, providing new services for their customers. And we spoke to quite a few different banks from both the US, from Europe as well. So the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, JP Morgan, and also BBVA. And they all took innovation and their approach very differently from each other. They all explained the benefits of open banking and the new PSD2 sort of regulation, which is kind of creating new services and innovation, which we've never seen before. But I think at the same time, there is some concern about the level of the playing field that is out there. I think fintechs sometimes do get a lot of advantages given that they are slightly less regulated, but at the same time, they still rely heavily on commercial bank infrastructure to actually access RTGS systems and payment settlement infrastructure as well. So that was in a nutshell what the latest journal covered. And what we might expect in the next half of the year is a lot looking at tokenization, which has been a big theme that has come out from a number of our meetings. We would like to cover exactly what a definition of a token is. There is a lot of different views on what a token might be. Some people say it exists already. Some people think it's completely novel and the existing sort of legal and technical frameworks need to be changed around tokens. And also looking at the future outlook and what the sentiment towards tokenization is. And this is sort of getting the perspective from regulators, policymakers, the people that actually write these standards and technical definitions. And also hopefully we want to cover what might be the trigger for a more tokenized economy and whether they will be real world added value from having tokenized assets. So I think that's a big, and as it's a new theme that we're covering at OnFifth, that will hopefully come out towards the third quarter of this year. Another big project which we did last year also is the future of payments, which is a benchmark study looking at how different payment providers, different stakeholders in the money supply chain are looking at payments as a whole and money as a whole. So I think again, we will have our members, which are all central banks, commercial banks, payment service providers, fintechs, big techs as well, how they're approaching payments in the next few years.
A lot to look forward to then. And for our listeners, if you do want to download the journal, go to onpiff.org/DMI. It's there. It's available to everyone. And I think that wraps up our update for today. If you have any feedback or you want to discuss how to get more involved in OnPiff's DMI, do email inquiries@onpiff.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Our next podcast will be on the role of a just transition in developing sustainable cities with Peggy Pouquet-Say, Chief Strategy Officer from Good City Foundation. Thank you all for listening, and we hope to welcome you back on our OnPiff channel soon.
Thank you for listening to the OnPiff podcast.